I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Gray Larson was already a teenager when he heard the first sounds of the Irish flute. A bit too late, some might say, to claim that he was weaned on the music, as so many others have been, but those raised eyebrows of people who were steeped in the traditional flute music didn't deter the young Larson. 30 years later, he is an acknowledged expert in the history and the sound and the meaning behind the music. Gray Larson writes in his new book on the Irish flute that there's something about the music that both mirrors and projects the soul of the musician, something that provides a spiritual link back through time. And so what do you hear in the notes of the Irish flute? Is it just dancing and drinking music? Or is it something more, something that actually does offer that connection to the past? Our phone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Gray Larson is my guest this hour. His new book is The Essential Guide to Irish Flute and Tin Whistle. His new CD is Dark of the Moon. And welcome to The Connection. Nice to have you here.
Thank you very much.
This is actually the title, or not title cut, but the first cut.
This is the first cut from Dark of the Moon. That's right.
And just as we're listening to it, anything we should know about this particular piece of music, why you chose to start the CD with it?
Sure. Well, this first group of tunes, there's actually three tunes that are all connected together, are unusual tunes in the Irish tradition. And I think they're older tunes than most of the ones we hear. And they're what we call crooked tunes. In other words, they depart from the normal kind of very symmetrical structure of Irish music. And the musician adds a few extra beats here and takes away some there. And I really love that kind of music. And so this first tune is called The Cat That Ate the Candle.
So tell me about that moment when you, the teenager, first heard the sounds of the flute. Was it this sort of great moment of discovery?
Yeah, it was. I remember it quite clearly, actually. It was another teenager, a few years older than me, also not an Irish-born person, but a guy named David Mulk, and he was playing Irish flute and Irish fiddle at this kind of retreat camp I was at. And, yeah, I remember it very, very clearly. Just the sound, the kind of, not only the sound of the instrument, but the musical language that he was speaking with it just engaged me in a very deep and immediate way.
What do you mean by the musical language that he was speaking with it?
Well, on Irish flute and fiddle and pipes and all the instruments that share this common repertoire of music, it's as if there's a grammar and a syntax and a vocabulary all its own.
More than just beat or rhythm.
Right, exactly. There are certain sounds that you produce on the Irish flute and tin whistle, let's say, that are very, very extremely brief notes that are so brief that we really are, the human ear and brain doesn't perceive them as actual notes. They're too quick for that. We just hear them more as articulations or the way that a note is begun. And there's fingered articulations, which are called cuts and strikes, sort of bouncing your fingers off of the flute and doing very quick little lifts of the fingers.
You're going to have to give me a demonstration of what you're talking about. Right. Here you are with your flute. And
I'll be glad to.
Hear how it works.
So, for example, if I were to play this, you hear three notes. One, two, three. But there's actually some tiny little sound that's separating the notes from the others, and I'll stretch those sounds out so you can hear them as notes. So we hear five notes now,
like a stepping stone,
one,
from
two,
one
three,
to the other.
Four, five. But if I make those intermediate notes so very, very brief, you no longer perceive them as being notes, and you hear three notes instead of five. That's called a roll. It's a three-note unit of music that is unique to Irish traditional music. So it has a magical quality, alchemical kind of quality to me.
Does it fit with the pipes and the concertina and the harmonium and all the percussion that we'll hear with Irish music as well? I mean, are they also able to kind of translate that same language?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a language that you have to learn by immersion, you know. you can read books, and my book goes into more depth about it, I think, than any preceding books did. But still, there's no way to learn it solely by reading about it. You have to, as if you were learning a foreign language in another country, just immerse yourself in it and listen and listen. And the way that language works seeps into you until you reach a state of fluency eventually where you don't have to think about it. You're no longer translating, you're just speaking in this new tongue.
Now, somewhere along that process, Gray, you're meeting the people who have been weaned on this music. You're learning from them, figuring out that whole community. Was it tough to penetrate at some point? Were there people going, well, who is this kid from Cincinnati?
Well, that moment lasted about a minute. And then as soon as
it's an intimidating minute for a lot of us who think about it. You know what I mean?
True.
It's like, that's their music. We could never play.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I remember meeting some of the older Irish musicians in Cleveland, Ohio. I walked into a meeting of the Cleveland Irish Musicians Club in the basement of one of their homes. And there were about a dozen elderly men. And then me and a couple of friends who were kind of college-age hippies, this is back in 73, you know, walking down the stairs, and there was kind of an icy apprehension in the air. But as soon as we sat down and started to play music together, that just totally dissolved.
Michael Kennedy, one of those characters in that room?
No, he wasn't. I had met him a little earlier in Cincinnati, Ohio, actually the same year in Cincinnati, Ohio. Yeah, so he was a different guy with a different kind of history.
But an important link for you in getting to understand the music?
Extremely important link, yeah. He was born in the year 1900 and lived in Ireland for 23 years. And during those years in Ireland, he never experienced electricity, automobiles, you know, of course, nothing like radio. And he never traveled more than about 10 miles from his farm. So his entire world was that small locality, and all the music he learned, and the only music he ever heard during those years were the music played by his family and played by his neighbors, you know, live music. Nothing, no recording.
Michael, where did you learn most of the tunes that you...
I learned them at dances. When I'd be sitting down at a dance, I'd have my head down listening to the tune, and I had a melodeon and a tom, and when I'd come home, I'd try it out, but I couldn't get it the first time, nor maybe the second time, but I'd keep at it until I'd have it, and then I'd listen to it again, and I knew I had it.
Was that back when you were a young man?
When I was a youngster, yeah. I had great memory. Then now I can hear a tune, and as soon as I hear it, when he stops playing, I forget it. I used to play it till 3 o'clock in the morning. Be breaking day. And we'd have to walk home about 2.5 or 3 miles.
This is mainly in the wintertime, you said?
Well, you know, in Ireland, they're mostly farmers, and they don't have any work to do. When they finish harvesting the crop in October, they have October, November, December, and January. The youngsters have 4 months to themselves. They don't hit a lick, but go to the dance and come home at 3 o'clock in the morning and go to bed and get up at 12 and have breakfast and wash up and get ready for the dance again. I don't know whether they do that now, but that's the way they did it when I was a youngster.
That's the voice of Michael Kennedy, who is no longer with us, but brought to us on tape and in part through the good graces of Gray Larson, who's my guest. We're talking about the Irish flute this hour. And when you were saying that Michael crossed the pond, there's a story about a police chief from Chicago, I'm not mistaken, right?
That's right.
What's his name? Francis O'Neill.
Francis O'Neill.
And he's somehow connected to a piece of music you're going to play for us. What's Francis's great contribution here?
Well, Francis O'Neill was an Irish flute player as well, and a great devotee of traditional Irish music. And he came to be the chief of police in Chicago, I think, in the 1890s. And he was in a position of some power there, and the story goes, and I think there's a lot of truth to it, that he had the habit of hiring Irish immigrants who played music to be police officers.
So then, he could listen to the music, play the music?
Yeah, so he could learn from them. And he collected tunes and transcribed them in music notation and published books of tunes. And one was published in 1903, another in 1907. And these collections are still considered kind of absolute must-have books for Irish musicians.
I'm going to get you to stand up and give us a little bit of... This is called Child of My Heart. And interesting, just to reflect back to what Michael Kennedy was saying. Michael Kennedy was saying, you know, that they weren't working with sheet music, that they basically played one song one night and forgot the next.
Yeah.
And O'Neill's contribution was that he actually did get some of this down so people like you could play the songs. Is that right?
That's true. But you can't just play the music purely by reading the notes. You have to already know something about that musical language, because the music that's written down is simply a skeleton of the music. It doesn't tell you the whole story.
Okay. Gray Larson playing Child of My Heart. The music played by Gray Larson, who's my guest this hour in the studio. Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-TALK. So now you've had a taste, something about the music that is mirroring and projecting the soul of the musician. What is it that you hear in the sound of the Irish flute? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio.
Support for NPR...
My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, a chance for you to listen to and call in and talk about the music of the Irish flute. Gray Larson is my guest. He has a new book out. It's called The Essential Guide to Irish Flute and Tin Whistle, and I don't know whether or not we'll be shipping one across the ocean to... where specifically would it go? North Roscommon and South Sligo. But Matt Malloy is joining us now on the phone. Most people who know anything about this music will know Mr. Malloy as the flute player with the Chieftains. And Matt, exactly where are you as we're speaking to you now?
Hello, Dick. How are you doing?
I'm very well.
Good stuff. Yeah, we're at the moment I'm playing with the Chieftains in we're in Milan. In Italy, and we've been playing a few cathedrals around the Milan area, getting into the Christmas spirit, if you like.
Doing any recording there, Matt?
No, not this time, no. And you can tell Gray there that the flute sounds absolutely great and are tremendous in the cathedral. It's flying around the place.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Your father, your grandfather played the flute. You were pretty well born with the darn thing in your hands, weren't you, Matt?
Yeah, well, my grandfather played, and my father and my uncle, they all played flutes. They came from the South Sligo area in Connacht, in the west of Ireland.
So, what do you make of a kid from Cincinnati, Ohio, who picks up the instrument and is willing to take it on in the way that Gray has?
I'm very impressed. I think, though, there were quite a few Irish musicians in his area in Cleveland, I believe, when he got interested. Mm-hmm. But from the point of view of the book, I think it's very good because he's probably a little more objective, if you like. You know, and would therefore understand the problems of someone who would want to try and get into the music, if you know what I mean. You know, who would not necessarily have the music around them. And he would probably, I think the book would shortcut a lot of the problems a budding enthusiast might have. So I congratulate him on his book.
Thanks so much, Matt. It's great to have your approval and blessing on a project like this.
I want to ask you something about the Irish music that you play, Matt, and you've been playing, gosh, with the Chieftains. I look at the for 34 years now.
I'm the boy in the band. I'm only with them 23 years.
I thought you started in 79 with that gang.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's 24. It's going to be 24 at the end here. All right, so I missed a decade. Too much time in the pub.
There you go.
What is it about Irish music, though, that allows you folks, because you've done it so often, to mix it with rock, to mix it with Chinese traditional music, reggae, anything that you want to mix it with, and still the Irish music retains its own integrity?
Well, I think folk music is the basis of most all musics, I think. And it's just something we do. A lot of that would have been Paddy Maloney's idea. Just get stuck in and see what happens. And I suppose some of it works and some of it doesn't, you know. But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to do it.
Let me ask you a question just about your own ear as a musician, as a flute player. Do you prefer the sound of the flute all by itself, or do you like it when every other instrument is hammering away in a smoky pub somewhere?
Well, I like that too. But yes, I like the sound of the flute on its own. For preference, as a duet, I like the fiddle. I like the combination of fiddle and flute. And it's a popular combination from the region I come from, from North Roscommon, South Sligo, that area. That's a popular combination, fiddle and flute. And I think they're very compatible, and I think you can make a lot of good music, with those two instruments. That's my personal favorite.
You have a pub, don't you, Matt?
Yes, I do, in Westport in County Mayo.
And are you finding that the popularity of the music is growing at all?
Oh, yes, it is. Yes. I mean, you have people from all nationalities coming in, popping in every now and again with instruments, and we encourage them to sit down and play. And some from the mediocre to absolutely brilliant. And, be they German, French, American, Japanese.
Yeah, I think actually I would say too, Matt, that Irish flute playing and tin whistle playing are probably at their height of popularity right now. I think there are more people playing and learning the music right now than there ever have been. Would you say that's true?
Oh, absolutely true, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's very good. I think it's good for the music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tremendous, I think.
Is that because so much of it is getting written down? I don't know. Matt, do you read music?
Not very well, I would have to say. not well enough to spoil it.
That's
very good. That's right. You know, reading music can be very helpful for playing traditional Irish music, but it can also really get in the way. There are many people who are very dependent on music notation, and they have to get away from it. You have to internalize the music.
Usually what I do if I'm going through old books or whatever, I just try and get the skeleton of the tune, just the very basis of the tune, and then I sit down and fool around with it and express it the best way I can. And if it makes sense, I'll stay with it, and if it doesn't, I'll drop it and move on, you know. But, you know, you sort of get that, you get the feel. Or I think I do anyway.
Well, you're already a master of the language, so the notes on paper are just simply a little skeletal guide for you.
Matt, I want to thank you for taking time out of your tour to join us on the program today.
Many thanks. I'm delighted to be here, and again, wishing Gray the very best with the book, and I think it should be a help to all budding flautists. So, the best of luck with it.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Matt Molloy, perhaps one of the top, if not the top, Irish flute player in the world. And just a programming note, the Chieftains are going to be coming to the United States beginning next month. So if you'd like to know a little bit about their tour schedule, you can find a link to them at our website. We are at www.theconnection.org. And in fact, our web people have put a lot of time and effort into preparing today's website. So you can see their images of some of the people who are an inspiration for Gray Larson, as well as links to Gray's own website, once again, at theconnection.org. Intimidating to have some like Molloy on. I sure feel that way.
Yeah. Well, he's been very supportive of my effort. He's reviewed my manuscript in the process, and it's just, to have his approval and encouragement, it just means all the world
to me.
There's
some warmth in the community, though. It's not such a big community that...
Absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, the music brings people together in a joyful way, and that's one of the greatest things about learning to play this music is that you have this joyful thing to share with, and you can go almost anywhere in the U.S. or other countries and find people to play this music. And
well, let's go out into the wild U.S. and see what we can find on the program. 1-800-423-8255. Oh my goodness, we're further afield than that. We're going to Ontario, Canada. Paul is calling in from Fort Erie. Hi, Paul. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I do have a question. I had training as a child, and of course, and I kept it up on my own as an amateur pianist. And I only in my old age, relative old age, when I was 47, I took up the flute. But I play only the concert flute and basically Bach and Mozart, and just what I read from the sheet. My teacher, as I was a child, brought me up on learning how to sight read music. And I'm very interested in making the transition to Irish traditional music. Although I'm American-born, I'm a citizen of Ireland. My family came from originally from Ireland. I've always loved Irish music, and now that I've developed at least on the flute now the technical ability to play classical music on the flute, I think I might be able to make the transition. But it seems like And going from one planet to another.
Well, actually, you've touched on something that's very close to Gray Larson's heart here, that the divides, artificial or otherwise, between traditional and classical music. So, Gray, what would your advice to Paul be?
Well, my advice would be, first of all, to encourage you that, yes, you absolutely can learn how to play this music and play it by ear, even though, as you say, you have been used to reading music, you know, from a sheet of paper. And I would say the best way to start would be to find an Irish music session. And since you're where you are, I think that you probably won't have much trouble finding one in the Toronto area, perhaps elsewhere, and attend it regularly. And just let the tunes wash over you. And there are some favorite tunes, no doubt, that'll be played every week. And after a number of times, you'll probably find yourself humming some of those tunes. And you will have, in fact, effortlessly learned the music in a way. You will have internalized it so that you can you can hum it or sing it.
It's like the first time you mm-hmm. take off the life jacket, though, for a swimmer, you know, I mean, to put away the music stand and the music and trust that, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but you can go to one of these music sessions and seat yourself on the fringe, you know, there's plenty of people playing, and you can play quietly, and no one can really hear you, and you can you can go ahead and make a few mistakes.
How about that, Paul?
Everyone does that.
Well, I actually surprised myself. There was an Irish festival in Buffalo nearby here, and I did buy a whistle, and I was delighted to see that the fingering was almost identical to the concert flute.
That's right.
And I was able to improvise tunes quite nicely. So I do have a question about the Irish flute. Is it basically the same as the Baroque flute?
Yes, that's right. It's what people call Irish flutes now. It really would be technically called a classical flute. It was the flute really that evolved directly out of the Baroque flute.
But it's not silver, and it doesn't have all those valves and buttons that we're used to seeing in an orchestra flute. Though,
yes,
right?
In the modern flute, the BAME system flute,
okay.
Right, is usually completely made of metal. But this flute is made of wood, a dark, beautiful brown coccus wood. And all flutes before the 1850s, let's say, this style of flute, which would be intended to play early classical music on, and then before that the Baroque flute, and before that the Renaissance flute, and on, were made of wood. And this is this flute that I'm playing today is a direct descendant of that line of evolution. Whereas the modern flute, the one we're all used to seeing, was really a radical new invention at that time.
Why don't I get you set up to play us a bit of music? We were talking about hearing the Blackbird. Do we need to know anything about this piece before you play it, Gray?
Sure. The tunes I've played before are dance tunes and had a definite beat you could feel. Now, this is what's called a slow air, and it's basically an instrumental rendition of a song. And the rhythm is completely free and basically up to the player. So it's much more improvisational style of music.
All right. Thanks to Paul for that telephone call. This is Gray Larson. The piece of music we're about to hear in his liner notes refers back to all the way back to Napoleon Bonaparte, possibly the Blackbird referring to Bonaparte's attraction to the Irish people as a liberator, which never really happened, but the music does happen. Gray Larson in the Connection Studio. The name of that piece, The Blackbird. And Gray's here talking about a new book he's got out. It's called The Essential Guide to Irish Flute and Tin Whistle. You know, Gray, that one, that the speed or the pace of that's where the flute lives in my head. It sounds almost like a voice, like a human voice.
Yeah, exactly.
At that point. Do you like the slower pieces? Or I mean, does everything work at one level or another?
I love the slower pieces, yeah. And I tend to play even the faster pieces a bit slower than most people do, because I don't want to rush through it. I want to enjoy every flavor and every bend in the melody. And the slower tunes like that give a flute player the opportunity to really stretch out. And like you say, it is very much like singing. It's the sound is made from your breath.
You know, I'm conscious of you breathing, and it's almost a part of the music. It's not like the scraping of a bow necessarily, but it's like a part of it.
It is a part of it. You know, it's a breathing, living human being playing the music. And in fact, the music benefits from having some space. You know, it's possible to say on the fiddle or some other instrument to play without ever stopping for a moment. You know, but on the flute, you have to leave spaces, and that's part of the art of being a good Irish flute player, is how and where and when to breathe.
Something a little faster to take us out of this segment. This is called Palm Sunday, is that right?
That's right.
1-800-423-8255. A chance for you to join my conversation with Gray Larson. We're listening to the Irish flute, talking a little bit about its history and just where its place is in the music, not only in Irish music, but in music of the world. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support for National...
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. 1-800-423-8255 is the number for you to call. Joining my conversation with Gray Larson. We're here talking about the Irish flute. We'll play a little bit more later in the program. Also, a bit of the tin whistle. But let's go to Stamford, Connecticut now. Rita's joining us. Hi, Rita.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask your guest, how exactly does improvisation work in Irish flute music? I play the traditional flute, the symphony flute, myself. I have been for almost 20 years now. And I'm just wondering, what are some of the differences in improvisation? Do you have a bass, and is there a set system for improvisation around a key or a note, or is it just making things up as you go based on the feel?
Yeah, that's a great question. You are making things up as you go a little bit. It's like improvising within a more confined scale than, let's say, a jazz musician would improvise. We're not just simply playing anything you want to over a set of chords like you would in jazz. But here you're taking the melody and just changing it in small, like three or four note cells, you might say. And there's... in fact, there really is no definitive version of any Irish tune. You know, there's no, this is the correct way to play it, and this is how you diverge from it. So it's kind of a slippery thing to try to get a hold of. And again, it's the analogy to spoken language is a very good one. For instance, if you were learning to speak, let's say, French, and you spent a lot of time in France, and you started to learn the idioms and the slang, and you know, there are many different ways you can express an idea. That's the kind of improvisation, perhaps, if you can make that analogy here,
Is that the ornamentation that you write about in your book as well? Does that count as improvisation?
Yes, it does. Yeah. That's a big part of it. You can take... Can I give you an example?
Sure.
Like you might take three notes that say a G, a B, and returning to G, like that. And instead of playing those three notes, you might play this instead. So I've changed it. I've used an ornamental technique that I talked about earlier in the show, the long roll. And since that is three notes, I'm substituting it for another three notes and just changing the shape of the melody a little bit. So that kind of improvisation on a very small scale is really what we're talking about here. I'm not really diverging or detouring from the melody very far.
It's important, too, in case you're not playing a solo... That you're not throwing off the fiddle player or other people,
right.
So the improv has to fit within the pace that they're expecting you to play, right?
Right. Yeah. And in these small ways, the fiddler and a flute player will not be playing the tune exactly the same, but they're close enough to the same that they blend together.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me, I just wanted to comment in some ways. I also study Indian classical music, and the relationship between the vocalist in that, who is often improvising and doing ornamentations around a melody, versus the percussion or other instruments playing alongside. It's the same sort of thing, knowing that if one is improvising, it's not going to conflict with the changes that another is making.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not totally free improvisation. It's,
exactly.
It's actually within a certain structure and conventions.
Do you improvise both tempo and a melody, or, you know, hold one constant while shifting the other?
Well, by and large, holding the tempo constant, yeah. If you're playing dance music like jigs or reels or hornpipes, a real steady beat is essential. But the tune that I played a little while ago, The Blackbird, it's a slow air, and there is no pulse in that music. And you are very free to stretch the phrases however you feel expresses the music best.
Rita, thanks so much for your call. Now, our listeners might not know that, but that for the demonstration, you picked up the tin whistle rather than the flute.
Right.
And I have a hard time distinguishing the sound of the two when I hear them. This, you know, this song has a whistle and this one has a flute. What's your clue automatically that that you're hearing one instead of the other?
What's my secret? Well, if I played one of the smaller whistles, which is the most common whistle, I'm going to grab one off the table here.
There's three or four on the table. You can hear them rolling around.
This whistle I'm holding now is the most commonly played, and it's exactly half as long as the Irish flute. It plays one octave higher.
Is this also a penny whistle?
Yes, that's another name for it, tin whistle or penny whistle. And let me just play a little something.
Yeah. I don't know how you got that extra octave out of that little instrument.
So it has a different voice to it. It's a higher sound, kind of more bird-like, maybe.
Right, clearly,
yeah. So, but with some of the larger tin whistles that are playing much lower, I sometimes have trouble distinguishing it from the flute too immediately. But
now you'll pick up one instead of the other for what reason? If you're say in a pub and you want to play, is it just whim, or is one more suited to to an air and another more suited to a jig or a reel?
Well, if I was in a pub in a Irish music session playing with other musicians, I would almost always play the D whistle, the one I just played for you,
right.
Because then I'm playing in the same key as everyone else, and that's essential. But if I'm playing by myself, or if I'm the only melody player and there's someone accompanying me on, let's say, a guitar or a drum, then I'm free to choose whatever whistle I want. And this one that I'm holding now, which is a B-flat whistle, is a bit lower and deeper and warmer sounding. And it's just whatever whistle appeals to the player to bring the most out of that particular tune. So I'll play you a little bit on the B-flat whistle.
Song. Does that have a name?
It does. That's a tune named after a musician named John Joe Lynch. John Joe Lynch.
1-800-423-8255 to Paul Smith's New York now. And Peter, you've been waiting on the line. Thanks.
Yeah, hi, Dick. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
And Greg, you sound great.
Thank you.
brings back, it's such a haunting, beautiful sound, the flute. I was kind of like you, where I walk into pubs in Ireland not knowing anybody, and I play the baran. And they give you that wink and nod and welcome you in and just teach you.
Yeah.
And it's such a wonderful opening feeling, the way the music and the people are over there. I just wanted to relay that. I have played in Matt Malloy's pub last year, and the people in there were just great.
Yeah.
Just great.
That is one of the most wonderful things about playing this music, is you can start playing music with a total stranger, and you all of a sudden have a huge amount of in common. You know, this great body of music that you both know and both love.
You know, would you
feel
say,
like instant friends,
Peter, that it's hard to separate the music that you play from, the place that you play it and the people that you play it with, and the way that you're describing it. I'm sort of hearing that.
I love it to play over there with those people. Here, I live up in a mountain, so I'm mostly playing with my CDs and things, you know. I play along and try to learn the music that way. But when you go over there, it's so welcoming. They, no matter where I've played in Doolin and Westport and Ardra up in Donegal, and the people, they just, I can't explain it how nice it is and how welcome they are, and they'll teach you, and it's just great.
Yeah.
I'm just basically calling to encourage anybody else who has any kind of inkling to do that, not to be intimidated by the music or by the people or the country. It's just so welcoming. It's unbelievable.
I've had the same experience exactly. Yeah. All that matters to a good musician is that you demonstrate that you love the music and you're there to learn and listen and share, you know, the riches of that music.
Peter, thanks a lot for your call. I would like to hear you play one more piece for us, Gray. We talked earlier about hearing a composition of yours. Now, The Slopes of Mount Storm.
Right.
Where's Mount Storm?
Well, I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and there was a park called Mount Storm Park, maybe a half-mile walk from my house, and it was a perfect place to go sledding and in the wintertime.
See, I had this vision of sort of tattered tartans
right.
flapping in the wind on Mount Storm, but
yeah,
okay, get in a snowsuit. I can live with that.
Yeah, so so it's a place that I spent a great deal of time in my childhood, and sledding down these huge hills, you know, is just one of the most exhilarating things I can remember. So that's the feeling that's conveyed to me through this music. So I named it after that experience.
Now, we were going to put this one together with one called Hurry the Jug, but I think we're probably a little tight for time.
Okay.
So if we could just get you to do The Slopes of Mount Storm. This, once again, is Gray Larson. Slopes of Mount Storm. That's Gray Larson playing in the Connection studio. You know, Gray, last year we had the Irish group Altan in, and we were talking about their music and how they saw it connecting around the world. And they talked about their association with Dolly Parton and got me thinking about, what Matt Malloy was saying, that we need to kind of change our definition of country music in a way, country music of Ireland and country music of places like Appalachia. And
yeah.
If we think about it in that way, the music that you're playing, the Ode to Mount Storm, ought not to be something unusual to us, like you're an immigrant into somebody else's music. I mean, it has its place here in this country as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, culture in the United States of America is kind of like a mosaic of cultures that came from, you know, obviously many, many different parts of the world. And the Irish contribution to American culture is one, a very strong one. Certainly with, you know, immigration from Ireland to America has come in different waves. And certainly Irish people have had a big impact on our culture. So, yeah, it's, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm an American But I learned Irish music from people who lived in my community. So in a way, I was learning music of another culture, but in another way, it's the music that I found at home.
So. And you play it very well. It's been nice to have you in the studio, listening to you play and hearing you talk about it.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Gray Larson. His new book is called The Essential Guide to Irish Flute and Tin Whistle. His new CD with Paddy Leigh is Dark of the Moon. Earlier on the program, we chatted with Matt Malloy of the Chieftains. He was joining us from Milan, Italy. And if you'd like to find out more information about Gray and his music, we'll have photos on our website. In fact, they're there right now at www.theconnection.org. This piece of music that we're going out with, this is
called Dark of the Moon. It's the title cut of the CD, and it's another composition of my own.
Referring to anything in particular?
Oh, yes. Do you have time for a long story or a
short
story?
Can you do it in about 30 seconds for me?
Sure. The Dark of the Moon is the time beginning with the full moon and going until the new moon, when the moon is darkening or waning. And where I live in southern Indiana, there's a lot of folklore and stories about how things behave differently according to whether it's the dark of the moon or the light of the moon. So in the dark of the moon, things are more stable and safe and predictable, I suppose. So.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.